Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton. Software may well, in fact, eventually eat the world, but somebody has to write it first. All that software code comes from fallible, flawed humans. We've talked about biases in coding and algorithms several times on this show. We use software nearly every instant we're awake, and if we want to understand how today's digital world works, we ought to understand something about the industry building it. Computer programmers. So this week, we're hosting the author of Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World. We dive into the inherent troubles, especially sexism, that crop up as unintended consequences in simple algorithms, such as career suggestion bias, where men are offered higher paying jobs because that's historically the backwards situation that has been acceptable in the past.
Great example. A while ago, someone was working on training a automatically recommend jobs to job candidates, right? So they take all this past data of who got what job. And what they discover is that when they train this AI, it's recommending higher paying jobs to men and lower paying jobs to women. Because, of course, that's the pattern it learned from the past. That is a historical pattern. But that, of course, is a product of a whole bunch of crazy sexist ideas that are unjust and which society should be moving away from.
Right.
If you use an AI that can't make moral judgments, that just pattern matches, all you're going to do is replicate the biases of the past.
That's Clive Thompson, a journalist at Wired and the New York Times, whose new book, Coders, is already on digital and physical shelves. All right, let's get to it.
My name is Clive Thompson, and I am the author of Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World.
Clive, thank you so much for your time. Been a fan of your writing for quite some time, so I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
An amuse-bouche. I was looking at Coders, reading through it, and I noticed you skipped the preface, the foreword, the epigraph, and you just went right into it. I'm just wondering what choice that was.
Well, you know, I really wanted this to be a book of stories, right? I wanted stories that showed what it's like to develop software, what are the animating passions of the people who do this for a living. And so I kind of like the idea of just jumping in and it being and being narrative right away. So that's why I went that way.
Okay, cool.
I wanted to show people, you know, get right in there.
That wasn't a judgment by any stretch. I was just interested in that choice, and it makes complete sense now. I just want to know first how you got started on wanting to write this book and put these stories together.
For me, I guess the origins in some respect go back quite far because, I was a coder kid back in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. So I was hacking away on a VIC-20, and I could sense the power and the pleasure of these things. I didn't become a coder, but I went on to sort of write about software and how software is incredibly important in everyday life. And at some point in time, I realized, I guess about 5 years ago, that most people now, they get the idea that software is, you know, quote unquote, eating the world, you know, because they get up, they look at their phone, you know, they're text messaging, they're ordering food and cars.
Right.
So I no longer as a journalist need to convince them that software is important, but none of them have the faintest idea how it's made. Like, it's just a big black box mystery to them. And so it was thinking about that and having people sort of sometimes ask me, like, hey, you know, Facebook is kind of a mess, you know, the newsfeed. So why is it that way? Why did they build it that way? And I realized, yeah, people need to know a little bit more about how the sausage is made. And so that's where the idea for Coders came from.
We are recording on the day that Bloomberg has a report that humans are listening to voice samples via Amazon's Alexa speech recognition software. And one analysis I saw from Ben Thompson, who's one of my favorites, said that, well, what did we expect? I mean, how do you think this stuff gets made? And it's humans. I think that people may not really understand how many times software touches our daily lives.
Sure. I mean, there's the obvious stuff, right? There's the obvious stuff when you're on, you know, Facebook or Twitter that you think, yeah, this is software. But, you know, every bank transaction you make, you know, every time you spend money, there is fraud software trying to detect if it's fraud. Every time, you know, a plane takes off, it is loaded with software. Every time you hit the brakes in a car, there is software judging, you know, whether or not they should be cycling it back and forth a little bit. So over and over again, I think there's almost nothing you can do these days that doesn't involve software, except maybe going for like a walk in the woods.
Yeah, leave your phone behind. Having said that, now if we put some scale on it, we've got our arms around, you know, how important this stuff is. And I have to go to, you know, heavy lies the crown. How are coders and the coding community taking this responsibility?
I would say it ranges from very poorly in the aggregate to a minority of people who are, I think, a little more serious about what the consequences of their craft is.
Right.
At the very high levels, I think you have a lot of, in these quote-unquote big tech companies now, you know, like the very large ones worth billions, like Microsoft or Amazon or Facebook or Twitter, you know, Snapchat. You very frequently find people who are pulled in a few directions. Even if they are ethically concerned about what their code is doing, they have the capital markets barking at them, saying growth, 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 you know, more people using your stuff. And it's very hard to do anything that significantly changes the trajectory of your company when you are trying to make as much money as they are trying to make. Now, the worker bees, though, I think, are much more interested and unsettled by the massive civic and economic impact of what they do. And you can see that because the last couple of years, in the last 2 years, I mean, actually, it's really only a year and a half, mm-hmm. there's been sort of an uprising at several of the large tech companies where the worker bees, the coders and the designers have said, hey, we don't like some aspect of the corporate direction. We're going to, you know, thousands of us are going to sign a petition saying that we disagree, and maybe we're going to stage a worker walkout, which is literally like a 1930 style worker walkout, right? Mm-hmm. You saw that Google had one when they decided they didn't like the idea of making AI for the military. At Microsoft, you saw it when the workers decided they didn't like the idea of making software for ICE. So it's very interesting. I think we're seeing kind of a little split between the higher ups who have their fingers a little bit more in their ears and the rank and file, not all of them, but a significant chunk of them, who are becoming very morally and ethically awake.
To me, and disabuse me of this, but if you can, to me, there are two things going on here. I think that let's say these tech companies are becoming more mature as they physically age. I mean, the average age at Facebook is 31 now. So it seems like as these people have children, they start to kind of things get more gravitas around them. I think that's one leg on the stool. Another leg on the stool would be that us as a public are out of the Pollyanna phase where all tech is good, and we're maturing as to how it can be manipulated, if not weaponized, at the same time. So you're looking at it from inside the garden. What about us on the outside? I mean, how do we affect the changes that we want to implement and kind of enforce? What are the guardrails, I guess, is the question.
For the average person, you know, there are surprisingly few ways, I think, to on an individual level to affect the trajectory of large technology firms. Because, you know, you think of it this way. This is what one of the workers for Google told me. They said, you know, okay, so let's say that you decide to boycott Google. You don't like what they're doing with, say, YouTube. You think there's too many weird conspiracy videos in YouTube. So, you know, what are you going to do? Stop using YouTube? Okay. Stop using Gmail? They don't care. There are several billion people behind you. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, there's very little that an individual person has. The levers that citizens have and users of technologies have are moral and ethical persuasion and politics, which is to say, like, making the effects, the civic effects, the economic effects of big technology firms, taking that and turning it into a political issue, saying that, hey, you know, I want this to be something that's talked about as my party is putting together its presidential candidate, you know, or I want this is something that, you know, my city is talking about when it's trying to figure out whether to extend a hand to invite these companies there. Mm-hmm. That is really the great lever. And it works, right? It works because, you know, over in Europe, you know, they have considerably, say, stricter rules on privacy and how data is used. And that's already had a very big effect on the way that tech companies operate there. Even Canada has slightly stronger rules on privacy and how data is used. So it is entirely possible, you know, to shift the way these companies work, but you need to have a force that is as large and powerful as they are. That tends to be regulations and the will the people have expressed through government.
That was Clive Thompson, a journalist at Wired and the New York Times, whose new book is Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World. For links to the book and other Clive-centric resources, please check the podcast or the show notes that live online at KGORadio.com. Coming up after the break is part two of my chat with Clive Thompson.
It has all the markers of your abilities being pushed to their absolute limit. The rest of the world just sort of falls away. And at the end of it, you've accomplished something. You've moved the ball forward. Something is working that wasn't working before.
That's next. So please stick around for it. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.